I mentioned an hour ago at the top of the show tonight about the shooting, the mass shooting at the Gilroy Garlic Festival. The latest info on that from CNN, 3 confirmed dead, 11 wounded. The reports say that the shooter, the gunman, was engaged and killed within a minute after the shooting started. So that was a quick action on the part of the officers who responded. There is a search underway for a possible second suspect. They're not entirely sure if or how the other person might be related to this crime, but we'll have more information as it becomes available. We're talking with Chase Kletsky about her various UFO investigations, collaborations with TTSA, and interviews with folks like that, and also lobbying efforts in dealing with Congress and the renewed interest there on Capitol Hill in the UFO subject. In a moment, we're going to get into discussions about metamaterials and investigations, what they might be uncovering. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Chase, let's talk about metamaterials. A lot of talk about this going around. Some hints have been dropped by Lou Elizondo and others. I heard Dr. Hal Puthoff walk right up to the edge of saying we had recovered technology or materials that came from somewhere else that we didn't make. That was in a public presentation a year ago here in Las Vegas. I've had personal discussions with him and some of the others who were involved in these investigations. You're there talking to these guys. What's the latest? What can you say, if anything?
I really can't say much. I have seen quite a bit of the metamaterials in photos and things. It's interesting because I do have a background in investigating and analyzing some of the metals. I've worked extensively for about a year and a half with the Bob White metal and also the Benny Foggin metal. And what we're finding is that a lot of the alloys, we're not finding, you know, strange, exotic, we've never seen this before, but it's more in the processing of how we get these metals together. And that's something that I know has been discussed with this new type of material.
Can you say whether there are tests that can be done now that couldn't be done, say, 10 or 20 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. Even in the SIMS testing and getting, you know, a lot of those details and even to focus in on the metals to get a picture, you know, it's so clear these days. It's why we could definitively identify that there were no fibers in the Star Child skull and that this was dust and material from being lacquered, you know, that soaked into the skull. So it totally debunked the whole fiber, you know, rebar. But we're seeing the same thing with the metals. You know, it's just amazing, the technology. But it's also, George, why I take twice of what I need. When I'm taking these samples, I always take a little more, and they're stored because I'm also certified custodian for evidence. So I keep them stored because just like the police department, what if in 5 years we have even more that we can discover from some of these samples that I've taken over, you know, my career as an investigator? And that's what we've been seeing.
Let's say there is a piece of something that's found in a field, or some farmer had it stashed away for 50 years, or some military guy was at a crash site of an unknown craft and stuck it in his pocket, and it proves to be something that we can't make, that is produced or manufactured with a process that is unknown on Earth. What does it prove? How would it be used?
Well, I think, you know, any type of, it would depend on what it would be useful for. Like, is it a really hard metal, or, you know, something that's stronger than what we have today, or is it something that's lighter and but shows its strength? And those are some of the things that we've seen before. But that scenario is kind of the worst case scenario for us, because there's no provenance, there's no chain of custody. We can't prove where it came from, and that presents a whole set of issues when it comes down to the scrutiny. Because my job as an investigator is at the end, my case has got to be admissible, period. And if it's not, then, you know, the case is just dismissed that we didn't have the kind of evidence. So it's just really It's really interesting when it comes to the physical evidence why we have to maintain proper collection and documentation just for the provenance period.
Let's say you had a piece of something, some metal, that it's identifiable in terms of its what element it is. It's not anything unobtainium or some unknown material that doesn't exist on the periodic chart. It's known material, but it's layered, say, atom by atom, in dozens and dozens of layers in just a few microns. That the challenge, I would think, with something like that is figuring out why it was made that way. If we can't make it, for example, or there's no known process that makes it, the challenge is figuring out why someone made it in that way, what its properties might be, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's the same issue a little bit with the Bob White medal, with all those little chads. And it's never been reproduced to this day in the manufacturing, exactly individual, each individual chad completely surrounding this. So, I really don't expect a lot of exotic alloys or materials or elements to come to be discovered, because we're finding throughout our universe, it's all the same things. The moon may have more helium, which is a rare mineral and element here on Earth, but it's not that rare on the moon, but we still know the helium. And I think that's what we're finding, just in different makeups, how it was produced, I think is the biggest question they may be examining today.
Do you happen to know if there's a schedule for when some news might be coming out on any analysis of
materials? I honestly think that this might be the next step. And as, to the stars, I would imagine that they would be getting their ducks in the row and making sure that, their T's are crossed and their I's are dotted, because this is exactly what they would be presenting. It's one thing to go up with clear dialogue and evidentiary discussions, bringing in your witnesses. Now, the next step would be to produce, the evidence and the providence and everything behind that as well. And they're absolutely going to respect a job well done. And I don't expect anything less from Pudoff, Mellon, Justice, or Elizondo.
Well, there's some other efforts underway as well. I know Jacques Vallée and Gary Nolan have been doing some analysis.
Yes, and I love Gary Nolan, because I contact him every single time I have evidence. In fact, I just contacted him and talked to him a couple days ago, which, through email, and he just couldn't get involved with something I had. But, we discuss all the time about the used car salesman's, and some of these claims like DNA proves Nephilim, or, some of these crazy, outrageous headlines, they get, 5,000 more followers, but it ruins my efforts when I have legitimate evidence, where I can't get a lab like Max, Planck in Germany. They won't touch it because it's contaminated. The headlines are all over. They don't want anything to do with this because of these. I call them the used car salesmen. They're carnival barkers. They're out here just throwing headlines out, and it hurts the effort.
Yep. As you've been around the field long enough to know that whenever an organization is created like TTSA that has people who have any kind of experience with government or working for agencies, and that, as you mentioned, for decades, ufologists have clamored for people like this to come forward, but whenever they do, it's disinformation, it's a plot, it's, that's the charge leveled at TTSA. Now, it was leveled earlier against NIDS, which was based here in Las Vegas, and then the successor to NIDS was BASS, a government, a private company set up to host a government program, OSAP, which later became ATIP, and all those in the eyes of the UFO field are contaminated. You actually worked with MUFON when BASS was involved with MUFON, and you've heard the allegations that it's all a deep, dastardly plot. Can you address any of that? Because, you were out in the field investigating cases.
I actually redesigned the STAR Team program after Bigelow, and I can't even remember his name off the top of my head right now, but I'll think of it in the moment, the guy that was leading and working, developing the star team at MUFON at that time when Bass was involved. Bigelow is a hero. That man has put more money and sincerity into this field, and MUFON blew it. It was the wrong people in charge, and they weren't ready for this, which is why, you know, it failed. The program, it was such a good idea, just the wrong people. And I'd kill for Bigelow to, you know, fund me having a small little team like I did with the special assignment team, because, you know, we're rapid response, ready to go. I have a full forensic kit, and I know how to use it, right? So that was an advantage. It was a huge, huge gift, and MUFON blew it. So, you know, it's but it didn't stop Robert Bigelow's efforts in this field. He's continued to go on, and I've watched him as closely as a civilian can outside of that peer group. And what I saw was he kind of wasn't really paying attention to all the lights in the sky anymore, and, you know, kind of that silliness. You know, his attentions went to Skinwalker, and continues to be with his investigators working with the Navajos down in Phoenix. They were just at a conference and talking. And I saw the interest and the attention of people like NIDS, John Alexander, you know, some of these guys, Pudoff, Jacques Vallée. They're not looking there. I'm following where they're looking. And this is a totally different environment than these beings, flesh and blood beings, jumping into a craft and coming here with a full tank of gas and a Red Bull. It's bigger than that, and that's what I'm seeing. So, yeah, I kind of jumped up a couple pages here, but yes, Bigelow, I think did the field a huge favor, did MUFON a favor, and he's a hero.
It's a lot to digest, you know, the focus that it started with NIDS and looking at UFO cases, and then it expanded into something much broader with Bass. And most of that information, 99% of it, hasn't been made public, and I don't know if it ever will. But yeah, it's looking at a much more complicated mystery than just people from other planets visiting here on occasion. And that, it's daunting. That's a hard thing to explain, say, to members of Congress.
It is. It is. And this is exactly why you can't. And I believe this is what Harry Reid was alluding to in your interview with him, which is you can find on Facebook. On YouTube. And, you know, he says, I'm not ready to go there. We can't go there yet. This cannot enter the discussion. It's too big. It's complicated. And this is a process. This type of information is a process. I know when I first got in to investigating UFOs, I just wanted nuts and bolts. When I first heard of the abductions and all this, I'm like, oh, come on. You know, we don't need this woo-woo. And then, of course, we realize there's something to this. So it's a process. Even for those of us that have been here for a while, we didn't start off here. We started off back there somewhere and learned as we went along.
You had explored a fairly exotic subject of these metallic spheres that may or may not be filled with DNA that were being detected in the atmosphere. Where did that go? What did you conclude?
You know, the information on the DNA is just so exotic. They don't know what it is. They just know that it's biological material in these little microscopic balls and these little spheres, and they're metal. And what we learned from Professor Wainwright was they seem to be collected on things that come through our atmosphere. So as a UFO investigator, I'm thinking, this is brilliant, because there was an alleged landing in Russia, and these metallic balls were found there as well. And that's one of the reports I have. I have two websites. One is, you know, myname.com, and, of course, the other one is the Field Reports. And, you know, that set off this big light bulb and this huge, brick over my head, like, oh my gosh. So every time we have an alleged landing or crash or any type of report like this, we need to bring our magnets out and go over the area with, large, strong magnets to see if we can pick up any of these little balls, because they are found with stuff coming through the atmosphere. Then if they are present, it's most likely something from space, and we're one step closer to an answer. So that's why I thought that story or that discovery was so profound for ufologists and UFO investigators. So I hope people got it.
Well, so in 1993, I went to Russia, and we were the first people to interview the scientists who collected those spheres. He would study landing site trace cases, and he would search the soil He searched the soil because he wanted to figure out the shape of whatever it was that witnesses had seen land in a field or something like that. And he didn't know he was going to discover this. He was looking for microscopic organisms, because his theory was wherever these things land, the microscopic organisms would disappear from the soil. So he would go in there to figure out the shape of what had landed. And that's why he found these spheres at two different landing sites. So I brought some of those materials back, and some analyses were done, and it's pretty weird stuff, for sure.
And to have DNA in these metal balls, obviously this is manufactured material. It's just bizarre. It's crazy. I love this. This is great. I think I knew that you had done that before. I just didn't think of it at this moment. But once you started talking about that, you were the one person that went over and got this. Yeah, I do remember, and that's remarkable, because we do test the soil on these alleged sites, even for trace evidence left behind by their emissions, if there were any. And it also rules out other things like propulsion and jet fuel, and so soil samples are always a staple. But so that alleged landing, that was just amazing. It was a big red flag that's something new we all have to employ now, are those magnets.
Are there still landing site trace cases being investigated? Is anybody doing that work?
We have those reports. The problem is there's so few people, George, that actually get in a car or get in a plane and go. There's very few active investigators, especially with forensic kits and the equipment going out in the field like this, and it's sad. In fact I was trying to think of who else is doing forensic work, with full clean suits and all the industry tools that are required. Everything's sterile, and I couldn't think of anyone else in the UFO field doing it, which is bizarre. It's just, of course, we have to get to this level, because it's now consumer. As a consumer, you don't have to be a police official to buy this equipment anymore. It's consumer level. We have access to it. And I don't know. It's just, I think it's something that's really difficult is to get. But yes, we're still getting the reports. We're just not getting enough people out there.
The project, I was asking you about any media project you had going. What I had in mind was the program Extraordinary, The Seeding. Is that, talk about that yet? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This was something that Jack Roth and I were talking about. We were getting ready to write a book on the missing fetus syndrome, and this opportunity came up for this film. Because the first one they had done was so successful on Netflix. They had a meeting with The Orchard. Anyway, it's my first work as associate producer. I also appear in the film, but I'm so proud of this. It's gotten so many awards in film festivals that, we're going against other movies that aren't even UFOs, and we're winning. It's really struck a chord with the public. And I'm just so proud of it. It's going to be at Congress, International UFO Congress, that you and I are both speaking at, which I'm excited about, because we're both going to be at Branson as well. So September's a big month.
We'll talk more about both of those events coming up with my guest, Chase Kletsky. Coming up at the top of the hour, I'm joined by Tom O'Neill to talk about his book, Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s, a book that's filled with some real surprises. In a moment, we open up the phone lines to talk with my guest, Chase Kletsky. And I know a lot of people are already on the phones with questions and comments, and we'll be right back and get to as many as we can. Chase, before we go to the phones, ATIP. So the Pentagon says it ended in 2012. Do you have any insight on that? I've been told that it is ongoing.
Oh, it has to be ongoing, because we know that somebody took over for Lou. And I know that's probably all going to come out eventually, especially with the new inquiry from some of these Congress and senators. It's we even have watchdog groups like Freedom Watch that has petitioned court papers and is suing for some of this information. So this is a big deal, and the momentum in D.C. is really huge right now, and we just can't miss a day. We're working phones, you know, we're working leads. It's huge. And Lou, ATIP is absolutely still working.
Lou Elizondo said in an interview on television that he came pretty close to saying that been a crash vehicle that had been recovered, or at least crash technology. Have you had that conversation with him, and can you share any of that?
I can't talk about that. So, well. It's basically, I can't say it.
He didn't say it. So. All right. Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to my friend Barry in South Carolina. Barry, hey, how you doing?
George, always a pleasure, as you know, and I got a couple of quick questions for you, but Chase, I'm telling you, you are some kind of great guest. I wish you were all 4 hours tonight. Anyway, let me get a question in for you, and then I'd like to ask you, George, a couple questions. Chase, when your husband was a submarine commander and all, in his experiences, did he ever talk to you about experiencing any UFO experiences or USO experiences underwater?
Never. And I've asked plenty of times, and you learn, as you know, a submariner's wife, that you don't ever hear anything. I didn't even know what he did for the day. Our conversation was more like, you know, I had a great meeting with the captain, you know, had a couple personnel issues. Everything was so no details whatsoever. And I have asked, and nothing.
So if he had seen something, he wouldn't tell you?
Correct. I wouldn't know.
Thanks, Barry. Did you have something else?
Yes, that is an amazing answer. And thank you, Chase, so much. And please get back on again early, soon.
Oh, thanks, George, Barry.
George, have you ever experienced a true UFO sighting or whatever? And if so, would you tell me about it?
I'll put it this way, not that I remember, and that's about that's about as far as I could go on it. Not really, but thank you, Barry, for the question. We're going to go west of the Rockies. Archer in Hawaii. Hey, Archer.
Hey, hi there to both of you. George, in the first hour you asked Chase, and if her investigation was tending to point in a certain direction, and she three times allowed us how it was, I'm wondering, Chase, if you'd be willing to sum it up for us and tell us exactly what that is.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the entire question sum up.
What direction it's going, where it's headed.
About if your work was tending, after your investigation, after all this time, was tending to point in a certain direction, and you said that, well, yes, it was, but you stopped short of telling us what that is. Can you tell us what that is, please?
I will for you, absolutely. You know, in the investigation, and I've stayed very scientific, and I believe with everything that we're collecting and analyzing that this is going to be what Jacques Vallée said it was going to be. This is going to be more dimensional, and it's going to be more of a physics we just don't understand yet. And I think that's where it's going, and I've been on that direction, that track, for about, I'd say, about 6 years now, and there's just nothing that's come even close to, you know, waning or disproving anything about that theory at all. So that's personal. That's exactly where I think it's going.
Aloha, Archer. Thanks for the call.
Let me ask you this, Chase.
I mentioned at the beginning of the program about this idea of a bunch of folks gathering outside Area 51. And of course, we are dissuading them from trying to cross the line into the base. But all that enthusiasm among tens of thousands of millions of people who are relatively new to the topic, how would you channel that? Let's say there is an event that draws a big group of people. What would be a useful way to channel all that energy and enthusiasm?
Oh, my gosh, George, and that is exactly it. It's to look at, you know, they're taking a lot of heat, and even I've come out and said, don't do it, guys. That's, come on. Like, they can't stop us all. Well, yeah, actually, they can. It's the energy. It's the over 3 million people signed up. Now, even if this was just something that nobody intended, it is. This is an enthusiasm. This is millennials are getting involved. This is exactly what we need, or the, you know, people that are younger. This is a rollout, and I would let them go. I wouldn't charge it, but I believe what they're doing is, you know, making a festival now and letting the people come out, and there's going to be bands and, you know, art. I think that's so amazing.
If we were to ask them to focus that energy and say direct it at Congress, what would you have them say to Congress? What should Congress be doing?
Hashtag ask the question. That's exactly what I'd have them do, is call Congress and ask, what are you guys finding out? What are you doing? How are we going to get this information from the public? Because this isn't just going to Congress. It's not just going to the Senate or even the president being briefed. The public is aware of this as well at this point. So for me, I'd even like to do shirts. Hashtag ask the question. And that's what we need to do. Every tweet, every social media, and to call Congress and to call them, or, you know, just put up everywhere, ask the question. That would be
all
so
right.
Wonderful.
First time caller, Howard in Houston. Good morning, Howard.
Yeah, I've been involved with this subject for almost 60 years now. But basically, as I think you both know, none of this will be released other than what the MJ Control wants it released. This is like a Shakespearean play, and every step is being monitored by the reaction of the public and what they have to get out, and the degree to which MJ, just for a common name, I don't know what the heck the name is today, but the MJ authorities and certainly the business with Reed, the Senate of Nevada, pointed out how they've known about this since World War I, when the Red Baron supposedly shot at a disc. Certainly in the 20s and 30s and World War II, they've known that these objects, not made by us, thousands of years ahead of us in technology, were coming to our airspace, and there was absolutely nothing we could do about it. They shot at it. I know people who shot at it during World War II in B-17.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that point, that somebody has known about this stuff for a long time and didn't really know how to explain it. I don't know that there's an MJ organization, but somebody knows a lot more than we do. And Chase, I think, as you've been sort of intimating, there may be reasons to keep some of it secret. Senator Reed certainly thought that the possible technology breakthrough that might be achieved by Russia or China, if they were studying it and we're not, would be pretty significant.
And I think this is where it goes, where, you know, as average citizens, we're not thinking of a bigger picture of, you know, the real threat and the new Cold War of space. With Russia and China, this is real. And to have them come up with something significantly greater that we couldn't even, you know, fathom or match, it just can't happen. It cannot happen. And so we're not thinking of that. But I do agree, you know, there is a very small cabal. It's been compartmentalized that may be keeping track of this information. But it's cracked, and that information is flowing out. And I do disagree with the fact that this isn't going to go forward with as much information to the public as possible. Can't violate security oaths, can't violate security clearances, and you have to have these even as private citizens if you're going to be working in with these materials and certain information. You can't violate a lot of the ways and means and some of the things that would absolutely be defined in national security. So the rest of it is the stuff that will be coming out. I'm sure of this because it's already done. It's done. Nobody's arguing whether UFOs or these, you know, crafts are real. Nobody's just debating that anymore. Now the question is, who are they and what do they want? What are these things and what do they want? This is amazing. And I think the right people are getting involved. And they have been for a really long time. Hal Puthoff's not new. We all know that. He goes back way back, even before the NIDS days. And there's a long history of these very brilliant people behind the scenes. And for them to come out now and be very public and give us as much as they can, we owe them a debt of gratitude. Absolutely.
I want to go to the wild card line, and I've just lost the screen, so I'm going to leave it up to our call screener to pick.
And I'm sorry, I won't soapbox again, but.
Joe in Monterey. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind? Hello.
I don't think it's Joe, but that's okay. Am I on?
Yes. What's on your mind?
All right. Well, first of
all,
this
is Mark in St. Louis. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Better.
All right.
How you doing, George?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Chase. Oh, thank your husband for his service. I don't know if he was in Hunters or Boomers, but hey, I couldn't do it. Anyway, I'm not much on, watching too much of the stuff on TV on the History Channel because it's all this ancient alien stuff, and you can buy into it. You know, everybody has their own opinion, but I did watch the series on, Lou Elizondo did. It was extraordinarily good, and there was nothing in there by any means that offended me, surprised me, or anything. However, what I did take offense to was at the end, I think it was in the sixth part, they talked about that you can only draw a couple of conclusions from this. Either A, it's something that we have that's not being disclosed, you know, a military secret, or as you were alluding to, Chase, it's something that a technology that a foreign government might have, which is very scary because in essence, we don't have any kind of defense against it, or it's something from somewhere else. But what was interesting was in that sixth part, Lou also talked about how he had talked to some people in the Pentagon that essentially had pretty much shut him down because they were basically supposedly fundamental Christians or fundamentalist Christians that looked at all of this stuff as demonic. And you mentioned Jacques Vallée, so I guess I can go there. From my perspective, the two smartest guys I think that have ever really studied the subject, Jay Allen Hynek, you know, I grew up with him in the 60s with Project Blue Book. You know, as a kid, we were all excited. Oh, look, UFOs, you know. And then obviously Jacques Vallée in France. But both of them came to the same conclusion from what I understand, in that UFO activity is real. It is not extraterrestrial. It is interdimensional and demonic in nature. And just that sheer word demonic, I think, always scares people. But let's go back to something that I heard.
I have to stop you, Mark. I don't think either of those guys called it demonic. I've read everything that they've written.
They did.
No, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
But go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Well, anyway, here's all I'm getting at. You know, when you talk about why they don't want to talk about this stuff, let's say that, and this is something that I heard on Coast years and years ago, I'm a longtime listener, that supposedly sometime in the 50s, Edwards Air Force Base landing, Eisenhower, same thing could have happened in Russia, or God knows where else, but, you know, people land in supposed spacecraft and they make a deal, hey, we'll give you some technology, but you allow us to take a look at your people. And, and that was fine. But then you go back to, if these people are taking our people, you know, this alien abduction stuff, and we can't do anything about it, that's exactly why our government would never want to talk about this stuff. Because if there is, whether it be extraterrestrials, whether it be the fallen angels, whatever you want to call it, You know, if they're doing something with our people and we have no control over it, no way to stop it, to actually release that information out into the general public would cause just a humongous panic.
I'm gonna let Chase respond because we're almost out of time. So, in general, Chase, your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's it's definitely a theory that's just as strong as any other, is that this is the deception and it's cosmic and it's supernatural, and that this is the biblical deception to fool the elite with all this technology and them coming and fooling everybody, but it's not going to be good. I get all this, and until we have evidence on exactly who they are and what they want, which is something that is being furthered, we just have to treat theory as theory and hypotheses that way, and just rely on the science. Because the one thing we don't want to do is end up in the wrong camp or with the wrong belief system, especially when it becomes something that, this is a real phenomenon, so what's next? You just don't want to be on the wrong side and in the conjecture. And that's my opinion, yeah.
The issue of demonic forces that Lou was referencing is stems from the OSAP program, which is the program that was created by Harry Reid and the other senators. They got the money for it. They put it out to bid. It became OSAP. It was awarded to Bass. And after Bass had been studying much more than UFOs, a lot of other strange supernatural paranormal stuff, including Skinwalker Ranch, the leadership at the DIA changed. Some people were aware of some of the strange phenomena that were being investigated, and they were concerned. There was a Christian fundamentalist faction high up in the Pentagon that was worried that studying this stuff might open a door to something demonic, and that was one of the reasons that they pulled the money out of it. That's where comments from Lou Elizondo came from.
And there's still that faction. I don't know any other way to put it. I call it kind of that right-wing evangelic community that is very, very concerned with the messages that are being brought out with the UFO field. So this is why it's not as easy and to broad stroke and say that the public's ready for this information. They're ready for disclosure. They're ready to hear the truth, because I promise you, I doubt it. and that's part of it, is just the pushback and look at the opinion so far on just this little tiny crack.
Chase Kletsky, it's great talking to you. I'll see you on the road in Branson and then at the UFO Congress in Arizona.
I'm looking forward to it. And thanks so much for having me, George. It's wonderful talking with you and being here.
Thanks. We'll talk again. Up next, Tom O'Neill, Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the secret history of the 60s.